I saw records made. Music literally written in wax.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival, running through February 8th. Friday, February 5th, will show American Epic. The film pieces together the extraordinary 1920s story of record companies leaving the big city to tour America's backroads and capture for the first time the raw musical expressions of rural cultures. These field recordings, initially aimed for the rural markets from which they came, democratized music and gave voice to the most marginalized demographics in the nation. That's February 5th at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first annual Portland Bob Marley Birthday Party, Saturday, February 6th, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom in Portland. The life of Bob Marley will be celebrated with live reggae by Simba Puma and the Roaring Lions, by DJs Reggae Bob and Pablo One from Kingston, Jamaica, and live streaming from Kingston's own Bob Marley Festival. Again, that's the first annual Portland Bob Marley Birthday Party, Saturday, February 6th, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom at 615 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 9:01 a.m. Coming up on Waterworld, host Kristen Yount speaks on an update with Understanding the Superfund site at Willamette Harbor, with guests Barbara Quinn from the Portland Harbor Citizen Advisory Group and Cami Grandinetti from the EPA. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with your host, Chris Andre, followed at 10:15 by flashpoints from our siblings in struggle in the San Francisco Bay Area out of Berkeley. At 11 on the Radio Zine, environmental scholar Johan Rockström gives us a Swedish perspective on climate change. And at 11:30, science writer Kara Platoni talks about the latest developments in the science of sensory perception. And thanks for listening to KBOO, and thank you all the KBOO members for all of your generous support. If you are not currently a member of the KBOO Foundation, you can remedy that oversight at kboo.fm. Just click where it says Donate Today. Stay tuned now for Waterworld with your host, Kristen Yount.
All right. Well, this is an installment of Waterworld. I'm here with Barbara Quinn and Jackie
Calder.
Conger.
Calder.
Calder. That's what I thought. I knew it. All right. So these two women are on the Portland Harbor Citizen Advisory Group, which is a group that's created whenever the EPA comes in and declares a place a Superfund site, if it meets all the criteria. So I just wanted to spend a quick minute talking to you both about the history of the Citizen Advisory Group, because you've been doing it for a long time, and we kind of just jumped right in without really introducing the point of this show, which is to illuminate the different options that are coming about as a result of many feasibility studies and a lengthy process by the EPA, the citizen group, and also the possible responsible parties that are part of the Lower Willamette group. And we're going to get into all of these things, but first I really want to talk about the CAG, and honestly just say that 16 years of service as in a volunteer position that is, to me, so intensely complicated with so many different moving parts. I just wanted to really say on behalf of myself and my, you know, I just really, really appreciate what you're doing. And I just wanted to say that.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So, that's real nice.
Just for clarification, I have not been 16 years with the CAG, but Jackie has been with the CAG from the very beginning. I've been with the CAG only since maybe 3 or 4 years formally, and then maybe 5 years prior to that as just an observer.
In 2002, actually, the Superfund site was declared in 2000, whereas the CAG wasn't formed, the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group wasn't formed until January of 2002, and I was there for that. And I'm just not sure what else to...
Well, no, that's plenty. I think Kristen's point is very good. Having someone give 14 years of their time as a volunteer is pretty amazing, and we've got several people on the CAG who have at least that long.
Yeah, so I started with Travis at Willamette Riverkeeper and was sort of a river guardian and kind of caring about the rivers, all the rivers in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And then when this came up, it just increased my passion because, you know, I just kind of like to see the rivers, which are held in trust for the people. It's, they're actually, the river is a public, is a publicly owned in the sense that it's held in trust for the people, and it's important that we see it cleaned up.
Are you saying that there's actual language on the books that holds the Willamette River in trust as the commons?
Yes. If you look up the legalese, that one of the guys, his name is Weiss, and he wrote some of the doctrine, and there's whole papers from, I think it was from Lewis and Clark, because they're...
Well, actually, there's a public trust doctrine.
Right.
That is in effect, and that actually predates the United States, and it is the concept that was a part of the English common law, and it is a part of one of the rights in our democracy that that the river is held in public trust.
It's that sort of language in our in the law of the land makes it so much easier to fight these kind of fights too, because we have a leg to stand on. This is our river. It says so in
right.
this doctrine.
Absolutely. And it says so in Oregon law too.
It does say so in state law. The problem is a lot of people don't know that the river is held in trust.
I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I knew Bull Run was held in trust.
Yeah, under the public trust, common waters cannot be controlled or transferred to private interests for private purposes or gain. So our rights to use the river cannot be alienated by our governments or by private entities. But if people don't know that, then it sometimes encroachment occurs.
Yeah, they think the state owns it, like the Department of State Lands, and that's not really true.
Wow. Yeah, and I know that there are other states that have been trying to get commons language into their state constitutions, because if somebody comes along and pollutes an aquifer or something like that, citizens want to have the ability to look to the state law and say, it says right here that we have a right to clean air, clean water, and if you are stepping on that right by putting
pollution
into our water, into our air, then you are breaking the law, essentially.
That's right. That's right. And we need leaders who can take leadership on that.
Yeah. And we have the... Yeah, so I want to just... I'm just really curious about what it's been like in the CAG. I mean, can you maybe give me an idea of how many hours you spend a month working, First Jackie?
Well, In the beginning, it was not as much. And about 2004, I went back to school studying water and the environment so I could learn more about this. And I've seen the CAG go through phases where originally there were a lot of environmental groups, there were a lot of environmental justice groups, but it's a real hard, dense subject that people have a hard time with. It gets, I mean, your eyes glaze over at some of the presentations, and the science behind it gets very difficult. But the basics are still there. We want a clean river. As far as I'm concerned, the people are victims. I think even the PRPs are, the polluters are victims in the sense that Monsanto, in their ultimate wisdom to lie about the biggest problem, which is PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, they lied and said it doesn't kill fish and then it doesn't cause, well, in the factories they saw something called chloracne, and also there's something which caused cancer. And so in some senses, the polluters were victims, too, because they were lied to for so many years about these polychlorinated biphenyls. And, it's really unfair that Monsanto gets off the hook. Right now, the city of Seattle is suing Monsanto. I would love to see our city do the same thing. Because they were lied to, then they went ahead and used this bad material, and it just really has caused the biggest problem in the river right now.
Right, PCBs are the contaminants of most concern because they persist. We don't know how long they persist. They may persist for hundreds of years before they break down, and they're very problematic.
Yes, they not only cause cancer, which is scary to most people, to individuals, but they have something called endocrine disruptors, which means that they mimic hormones and they mess up the reproductive cycle. So you're not only giving the individual problems, but you're giving future generations problems. And that really is the most severe problem, is the fact that it interferes with reproductive problems,
right,
reproductive cycles.
And the thing about Monsanto was they were the only ones that actually produced PCBs for quite a number of years. So there are actually six cities in the West that are suing, joining suit to sue Monsanto right now for PCB cleanup of either their Superfund sites or their waterways.
Yes, and they have lots of money, but they also just merged with Dow, and so that they're larger than ever. And trying to defend themselves for the past lies. And that's, I'm sure it's a real problem for them.
Yep. Circling the wagons, building the office buildings full of lawyers, attorneys that fight for them. But we have, like you said, we have the law of the land in our corner and the support of these six other cities. And hopefully their day will come, so we have some time before Cammy from the EPA will be phoning in to join us in this conversation. But before she does, I want to make sure that we get a chance to talk about some of the remediation techniques and some of the jargon. And I just want to reiterate that you can go to www.kboo.fm, and I think on the front page this program should be up, and I have made sure that all the times and dates and locations of the EPA's public presentations, and also there are a couple of other forums put on, so Monday, February 8th at 7 p.m. at the Audubon Society, 5151 Northwest Cornell Road in Portland. Tuesday, February 9th, 7 p.m., the League of Women Voters, Multnomah County Boardroom, 501 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. And then Tuesday, February 23rd at 7 p.m., the CAG Forum takes place at the Linton Community Center, and that's 10614 Northwest St. Helens Road. And these, yeah. This is all easily found on the web. You can go to the EPA's website, or I really like the Portland CAG's website. It's very informative. There's a lot to know. But what you should do before you go to the hearings is really try to figure out for yourself and get a good understanding about what's happening. Because once the EPA decides on a plan, then we will have a 60-day comment period after that. And the EPA swears up and down that they are going to listen to the citizens, and really that can have a huge effect in the way that the river is remediated. And there are a lot of plans, A through G, and then there's G plus. So it's A, B, C. C is supposedly off the table.
A is off the table as well. So they're giving us five options.
So the five options, they will come out with a plan at the end of March, and then through April and May, you'll have 60 days to say no. If they pick E, say no, I'd rather have the G, and give your reasons why. And if there seems like they're not making the right choice, then we definitely, as a population, have the opportunity to educate ourselves, and our input will be heard. Do you think that it could make a difference?
The Seattle's had real impact on their Superfund site. With all of their comments, they were able to get an improvement over their proposed plan.
Yes.
Just simply by just getting the community to step forward and say, we want a clean river. It's important to us to have a clean river, even though it's just a 12-mile stretch, whereas Seattle only had 5 miles. We have almost 11.8 miles, and our problem is more severe, and it's deeper. It's got at least as much traffic as far as navigational. The other thing I wanted to say something about was the choices. B and D choices already have been specified by the EPA that they won't really address some of the main problems. I just finished reading one of the reports from the National Remedy Review Board, and that's one of the things they said, that B and D would not really address the severe problems. And that's kind of hard after all these years that they can't, are even considering that low of an impact on the problems in the river.
Right.
So
right.
I have a chart here, and I'm going to read it off, and then we'll just break things.
A chart of the options, right?
Yeah, a chart of the options, okay. Yeah. So it says alternative, and then how much dredging will happen, how much dredging and capping will happen, what will stay in place, which is enhanced, the EMNR enhanced.
That's the enhanced natural recovery. Mm-hmm. Kristen, before you read those off, there was just one thing I wanted to say too. The EPA is offering those five options, but the Portland Harbor Community Advisory, Portland Audubon, Willamette Riverkeeper, and the Yakima Nation are recommending an alternative we call G+, because none of the five options that are currently being offered actually addresses the problem of persistent pollutants in the sediments. That's what the PCBs are, but not only PCBs, we also have heavy metals and some other things in that stretch from the industrial activity. And so we're actually offering an alternative that addresses that better. And we're suggesting option G plus, that that does more dredging, considerably more dredging than any of the options that the EPA is offering.
We're also advocating the more dredging. Like the Duwamish had Boeing, and Boeing went forward and just dredged. I mean, they just dredged very efficiently and did a great job. And we're hoping to see that here. Also, another aspect of dredging is all of the air problems that it can create, and sound noise. And that sort of thing. But we're just hoping for very effective dredging where it is barged out, not trucks going through neighborhoods. We'd prefer barging over trucking, and hopefully we'll see that happen. The Hudson River has a great monitoring plan. We hope to see that right here on our river.
The other problem is that the monitored natural recovery has turned into a fairly controversial cleanup method, because essentially natural recovery does not occur in the sediments when you have persistent pollutants. Bacteria from sediments does not break down heavy metals. It does not break down PCBs. It does not break down some of the persistent pollutants which are causing the problems in the bottom of the Willamette River. So the very best plan that EPA is offering, Plan G, leaves 65% of the site in so-called natural recovery, when we know that natural recovery can't possibly remove those persistent pollutants. So we do not think that that's adequate. It's not going to help the fish get cleaner. It's not going to stop those terrible pollutants from getting into the chain of life and affecting all the river life, including fisher people. So we don't consider so-called monitored natural recovery to be a real effective, active method of cleanup.
Well, I guess so. We should probably just back up a little bit and talk about what dredging and capping look like as compared to in situ or in EMNR, which is enhanced monitored natural recovery. So we have four choices. Is it only the four choices that we have, or
There's treatment.
Yes, there's been alternative treatments. Like in New York Harbor, one of the things they did was used a method called biogenesis, and that's where they dredged out the PCB material and then process it and converts it to a benign material.
Yeah.
Cement lock is another one. Biotech restorations is another one where they dredge out the problem contamination, they lay it on land. They've actually been able to do like we do at our wastewater treatment plants, and that's where they use the bacteria to convert this contamination into benign products. And that's very possible. It's not cheap. There's no way we're going to say it's cheap, but it is effective. And biotech restorations has shown us, and we've seen several presentations on it, and we know that it's effective.
Jackie brings up a really really good point about some of these treatment methods are not cheap. The thing that's coming up is that so-called monitored natural recovery is the cheapest method of dealing with cleanup. And so it's proved to be very popular with some of the potentially responsible parties. But the fact is, the thing that's not being discussed in the media or anywhere else is that we have 150 to 200 potentially responsible parties. They're probably going to have about 20 years to pay for the cleanup. Many of those companies are very profitable. Some of them are some of the most profitable companies on Earth, including ExxonMobil, Bayer Crop Science, and BP, and companies like that. And Jackie actually did a little bit of math and came up with the fact that the top 10 companies that line the river in along the Superfund have assets and revenues worth just under $1
trillion. $943 billion.
That's right.
What? And that's right off of WikiInvest and other websites that are, you know, places where good resources.
Well, you can be pretty sure that there's been plenty of profit to be made in Portland Harbor. So there's plenty of money there. It's just, do our leaders have the motivation and the will to ask them to do a good cleanup? And that's where we're kind of at with our leadership.
So I don't see vitrification or cleaning the material or anything like that in any of these plans at all. Has it come up?
Well, we've kind of presented the case and brought those people in. Cement Lock called me again the other day. They were never really given a chance to present. And it has been used on sites, Housatonic, Fox River. There are several sites where it's been used productively and effectively. But it's also, like I say, it's expensive. And the EPA is very concerned about the cost factor, because they're afraid of the city of Portland keeps pointing out, well, what if we lose jobs, and that kind of fear. But then the other thing is, and we keep researching, the city's own research shows that for every dollar spent on the Superfund, we get more than a dollar back in profits, so that it's going to be much more effective. If we have a cleaner river, we're going to attract more businesses.
That's right. The city actually did a study that proved that. And concerning the alternative treatments, EPA has asked that some alternative treatments be involved in the cleanup, and the CAG has asked for that as well. That's been a very important point to a lot of our members.
Okay, good. Because I know you see it, I hear it in coming to meetings and coming to forums and seeing presentations. You see always that there's alternative ways to deal with it, to deal with what comes out. But it doesn't really come out. It doesn't really show up in the literature, and it doesn't really show up in the presentations.
You're right.
And I think they always try to defer. Well, we're not ready to make a plan until we have our document of record. That's another important phrase to learn, document of record.
I think it's called record of decision.
Oh.
And then, that's close enough. And the thing is, after the record of decision, then they do what they call the fine-tuning, the remedial design.
Right. So at any point, this remedial design, which, I mean, somebody brought up green jobs. Is it possible that we could get some sort of factory type thing or a plant of some sort? That is,
there could be jobs with dredging, there could be jobs with testing the water, there could be laboratory jobs. You know, we're going to have to, like Jackie was saying, monitoring is going to be very important. There could be jobs around that. The CAG, as Jackie had mentioned, is planning on monitoring well down the river during this process. That's what we're hoping for, that's what we're asking for, to make sure that the cleanup work does not cause too much problems. So it's important. And all those things could involve green jobs.
And not only more green jobs, like during the Superfund itself, but afterwards. I know I always tell people that there are 10 cities. There was a Ceres Society did a study, and 10 cities in the United States are running out of water. And we know if we cleaned up this river that we'd have a better job of attracting those businesses from those cities. It's Atlanta, San Antonio, big cities in California, that kind of thing. If you ask, and I've read this article where somebody asked Intel why they came here, and they said it was the water. And so we don't think that necessarily we'll lose jobs, but we'll gain them because of our clean river. Not only that, we'll gain recreational jobs from the river being cleaner, that kind of thing. I mean, for years we've eaten the fish out of this river, and for thousands of years we've eaten the fish out of this river. Why can't we now? It just doesn't make sense. I mean, we should be able to eat the fish out of the resident fish out of this river, and not just a deck of cards every month, but just a normal amount of omega-3s that keeps a family healthy.
Well, that's what Jackie's saying. When she's saying deck of cards, she means that we're only allowed to safely eat 8 ounces of resident fish out of the lower Willamette per month, right?
Per month.
So the EPA's plan options are not going to bring us to safe fish. And what the CAG is asking is that the fish be made as safe as the rest of the metro area, that the fish in our harbor should not be any less safe for people to eat than the rest of the city of Portland. And we have a lot of folks fishing down there, both recreational fishing and subsistence fishing is very popular in the lower part of the river, and we want them to be able to use the river, our commons, as safely as anywhere else in the city of Portland.
Yeah, Columbia Riverkeeper even did a study of sturgeon. Sturgeon was sort of omitted out of all the remedial investigations and the feasibility study, and it's pretty sad because a lot of people fish and eat the sturgeon. Well, the sturgeon are just full of PCBs. Columbia Riverkeeper found that there is like, is it 70 times the normal amount, or 70 times what they expect to see in a normal fish?
Oh, is all right. It sounds like we have Cammie Agrandinetti on the phone. I hope I said your name right. She's calling us from Seattle to talk about the exciting 2 months we have coming up to learn all about the Superfund site that is in our river from the Fremont Bridge all the way to just about where the Willamette meets the Columbia. Hello, Cammie.
Yes, hi. This is Cammie.
Hi. So thank you for joining us today. We are talking about jargon. So what kind of things do people need to know as they come to these meetings? What are some of the jargony words that you can define for us now?
That's a good question. Thanks for having me to participate and start to help people understand all of the information that's out there. One thing before I get started, I just want to let people know that we do have a website. EPA has a website with a lot of information on it, and I'll probably be referring to that throughout the discussion. And you can just go to your favorite search engine, look for EPA Portland Harbor, and you will find one of the links should take you to the EPA website, where there is a lot of information about Portland Harbor. As far as jargon goes, there is a lot of jargon with this work because the work is complicated. For example, just the contaminants themselves have very long chemical names, like polychlorinated biphenyls. That's one of the simpler ones, but we'll call those PCBs. Then there are, words that you'll hear related to the cleanup, like remedial action levels, and I'll talk more about those later. Those are important. You'll also hear us talk about preliminary remediation goals. Those are also important. Those are ultimately what become our cleanup levels, our goals that we hope to achieve. It's not possible to go through all of the different jargon words that you'll hear, but again, we do have resources and people available, so when you run into those, just look on the internet or attend a public meeting or reach out to one of us in order to figure out what those mean.
Okay. So, let's see. Oh, you know what? We have a call. Let's hear what Mitch has to say. He's from Beaverton. Mitch.
Yes. First of all, it was very good to hear you note the levels of PCPs in sturgeon. Sturgeon being bottom feeders would be representative of what the bottom feeders are going to be loaded up with simply because of their proximity to what's in the silt. Secondly, nobody in the mainstream press, so I would hope that the alternative media like KABU would jump all over Steve Novak, the Portland City Council member, who gave an interview to Willamette Week a few years ago when he first got elected to the City Council, in which he talked about his background working in Washington in cases involving Superfund sites, and he said that the people of Portland are basically unrealistic about what they can expect, and that yes. the government shouldn't spend as much money as they are dredging yes. because there is simply a question of pragmatism. I'm not against pragmatism. Well, I'm against not having an open discussion about it. And I attended a Thousand Friends of Oregon banquet last summer, and Novick was there. And that's ostensibly an environmental protection organization, a Thousand Friends of Oregon. And they raise a lot of money boasting about how Oregon is at the vanguard of progressive environmental laws. And nobody asked Novick about those comments, and he hasn't been asked about them since they were published in the Willamette
Wow.
Week.
Well, right. The problem with Steve Novick is that where he was originally an environmentalist, his funding politically is coming from the polluters, the PRPs. That's how he got elected. So it's not any wonder that Steve Novick is trying to be pragmatic. We notice that all the politicians that have any connection, whether personally, in terms of family, that they kind of run this bias. If they've got a connection to the polluters or the PRPs, like the city is a PRP, is a polluter. And so they're all defensive about their position, whereas like the city of Seattle's suing Monsanto. They're on the side of the people getting a cleaner river, and the PRPs don't want to pay for a proper cleanup. I mean, this cuts into their profits, so they don't. But Steve Novick has actually taken funding to get himself elected, so he's really kind of changed.
Those are excellent points, and my question is, why is it when we have such good, aggressive community radio and alternative press interrogation of public officials, why is it that we don't hear on the KABU Evening News that Steve Novick has been invited to KABU to discuss his views?
I can answer that. I'm Kristen. I'm the host here, and it is extremely difficult to get people who work for the government here. You know, everybody has handlers. It's a miracle that we could get Cammy to speak with us today. Difficult to get a city official on the phone, you can imagine. And I definitely do call often.
I appreciate the work
Thank you.
And if you do that, I would just say that it's very useful to, on the news, indicate that you have invited them. Because every time the audience yeah. hears that a public official has been invited, like Earl Blumenauer is another mm-hmm. a person who is feted by these environmental big box organizations
right.
that raise tons of money.
Oh, yeah.
But we never hear him say, we never hear on the alternative news or press that he's been invited to discuss why he supported fast track yes. for the trade
okay.
agreement.
Well, okay. We gotta stay on point here.
It's just a tactic
Thank
that
you.
I think we're missing.
Thank you, Mitch.
No.
All right, yeah. I mean, what Mitch was saying was super important, and it's true. We need to hold our city government accountable, and people need to be calling up those city commissioners if they want to have their voices heard about, I mean, if I feel like the city commissioner needs to hear something, I definitely call. And I think that we need to just sort of readjust our focus. We have Cammie on the line here, and we'll just take that one piece of jargon that I heard, PRP. We'll just get back to basics here. Cammie, how do you find the possible responsible parties? What's the process?
So, and PRP, just to clarify what that is, because people will probably hear us use that term, it's potentially responsible party, and it is a term of art under the Superfund law. And the Superfund law is written in order to ensure that the polluter pays for the contamination. And part of the strength of the Superfund law in doing that is enabling EPA to request information from parties in order to discover, you know, whether or not, or discern whether or not they are responsible for contamination, or whether we can find a link to contamination on the site. And so we have done a very large effort in requesting information of well over 100 different parties in order to figure out what their operations were, what their discharges were, what they made, where they put the waste materials they had. All those kinds of things have been compiled, and it's millions and millions of pages of information associated with all those different parties. And we have compiled all of that, and then and that's, you know, that's an evolving process. It has been ongoing for several years now, and we will use that information in order to figure out who we invite to the table to do cleanup. Historically, people may be aware, we negotiated with 10 different parties to do the investigation, and that work has been work that started back in 2001 and has been ongoing, the data collection, the analysis, determining where the risks are, and then identifying what might be appropriate ways to clean up the contamination. And that's the work that's been done to date. And there were 10 parties that signed up and worked with EPA to do that. Moving forward, based on all of the information that we've collected, as I mentioned, in trying to figure out who's responsible, where are they responsible, we will be working to bring other parties, more parties, to the table to do the cleanup itself.
What is the process to get the possible responsible parties more involved? Like, when do they get the bill?
Well, so as we've been working under the first agreement that we had to do investigation, those parties have been getting bills for our work about every year. And they've been paying, and they've been working with us. As you all know, we're now at a phase in the process where we're about to launch what we think an appropriate cleanup would be for the project. And the reason why we're holding so many public meetings, you know, in this next several months, the reason why I'm on the radio right now is to make sure that people understand that we're at this very important phase, and that people should start, if they haven't been paying attention, start learning about the site, go to public meetings, because we really need to hear from everybody about what they think on how the river should be cleaned up, whether or not they think it's appropriate. We'll be very interested to hear from everyone. I know you all have been talking a little bit about that prior to me joining the call. And so it's important, one, that you understand the work that has been done already, and then can weigh in on what a good cleanup might be moving forward. And so, specific to your question about what is the process for people or for us working with parties, once we decide, once the agency, EPA, makes a cleanup decision, and which we hope to have by the end of this calendar year, then we look to the parties out there and we'll work with them to go about cleaning up the river, and we will enter into legal agreements with them to do the cleanup.
All right, sounds good. So there's 150 PRPs, possible responsible parties, and they've been given notice. I'm not clear, how long have they known that they were on the list? When did that first go out?
So we haven't noticed officially those parties for this next for the cleanup phase. That will happen after we write a cleanup decision. What we have done that makes parties aware that we're interested in them is, as I mentioned, we've sent information requests to them, which, you know, identifies why we think we're entitled to ask them those questions, which does put them on notice that the agency is looking into them, so they understand that. And those notices have gone out, you know, I mean, several years ago. I mean, like I said, they're evolving. They get updated, or we find new parties. So it's not like there was a moment in time, but it's been many years now that most of the parties are aware that EPA is considering them to do work out there at the site.
Okay. Well, and if there's anything else that you want to add, I don't want to keep you on the phone for too long. I know you're really busy. So is there anything you want to add before we let you go?
I guess I just want to again emphasize that people make good use of our public meetings that we have. There's a meeting coming up on February 11th at 7 p.m. at the Matt Dishman Center. That's the next big public meeting that EPA will be sponsoring. There are several others that we're going to be having through February and March. All of that information is on our website. As I mentioned, go to a search engine, look at EPA Portland Harbor, find the link that is an EPA website, and there will be information about all the different public meeting opportunities we have, as well as information on that website about the site. And our goal over the next couple months is to get people enough background information on the site so that when we do have our proposed cleanup alternative, people already have a general understanding of the site so that they can then consider whether the cleanup proposal is adequate or too much, too little. What do you think about it? And we're aiming to have that proposal out end of March, first part of April. And then we go through the formal public comment period, where we will also have a series of meetings and open houses for people to come and ask questions and learn more about the cleanup that we're proposing. And like I said, our goal is to have a decision on what the cleanup should be by the end of this calendar year. So the time is ripe right now for everyone to really go find the information, come to our public meetings, and then in order for you to really make sure that your comments, that you can provide comments, because we want to hear from people when we're in that public comment period.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great day.
Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Bet. All right. So possible responsible parties. I have a question. It's kind of a squishy question. These possible responsible parties, there's big ones like Chevron, Gunderson, Northwest Natural, Siltronic. And let's face it, I mean, this is our hometown. These are people from our town. So how can we work together to clean up our river without making it the classic jobs versus the environment argument that is a completely I don't want to say crap argument, but what I just said it. It's not. It doesn't have to be jobs versus environment. I mean,
no, it doesn't.
And within all of these hometown businesses that we have, they have an opportunity to put more jobs and put more of their energy into making the river better, and therefore making their business better, and just adopting best practices. How can we just make it about that?
Wow. That's a really good point, Kristen. And what was brought up a little bit earlier about the city of Portland study that showed that if we do a good job of cleaning up the lower Willamette, we'll actually gain as a community, we will gain jobs, we will gain revenue over time that will make it actually more profitable to clean the river rather than to continue on leaving it the way it is.
Also, I'd like to identify the the PRPs as part victims in this, because Monsanto frankly lied to them. And I, you know, I come to these meetings and I see lots of attorneys coming, and they've paid for a lot of attorneys. I see, you know, how many dollars are spent on all this, and I know that a great percentage is in attorneys. I wish they'd take that money and go after the real responsible party, and that we know is Monsanto, that they shouldn't be, you know, worried about how many jobs they're going to have to take away because their bill is so high. They should go after the real guilty party. And I think the other thing I think is that I'd really like to work together with them as part of the community. I've worked for Saul for years. I'd like to actually have them come in and do some, on a personal level, restoration areas. I'd like to work with Gunderson again. I'd like to work with some of the bigger companies to do restoration. I think there's so many other ways to look at this. Well, at the same time, it's been a big battle because they have a lot of money and have a lot of media. I'm so grateful to KABU for inviting us, because very rarely do we get the opportunity to express what I'm going to call the people's side, because we represent the people, not PRPs, not the government, not anybody. We're the people's side. And I guess to me that's really important. And we don't have any money. We don't have a lot of money to pay for media, to pay for newspapers, and, you know, to influence newspapers and to influence the city of Portland, who's also kind of a PRP in this. And they get all defensive and get worried and all that stuff. And it's sad. It's just, I don't know.
It's true. You do have to wonder who is really representing the community's interests in this process. And we're not a funded, as Jackie said, we're not a funded
group.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is. To me, I've been going to the CAG presentations for a couple of years now. And it really just hit me recently that it's been around for 16 years. It's really mind-boggling to me that a group of volunteers would work on a project that is so hard. I mean, you got 150-plus possible responsible parties. You've got a federal agency that, I mean, there's derision. There are opinions about the EPA that, you know, and just there are opinions about environmentalist or whatever. So, you know, I just think that using whatever voice we can, you know, I'm going to be screaming and yelling about this for the next 2 months, or, you know, but I just want to show you my gratitude, because the citizen advisory group has worked tirelessly. And well, I won't say tirelessly, because it's like you're so immersed in it that you just really need to find ways to get out and talk to people. And how do people get involved with the citizen advisory group?
Well, we have monthly meetings.
We have monthly meetings, although for the most part, we've gone through 16 years of presentations and information from PRPs, from government, from all kinds of areas. Go to our website, if that's possible at all. Also, go to the forums. There you'll have brochures. Linton Community Center's forum on February 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m. would be an excellent source. And grab a brochure and just kind of study it. And remember, when you're looking at the information from us, it's we're the people. We're just, I'm an ordinary lady. I'm just a resident, you know, close to St. John's and close to the river. And I'm just on your side. That's all. And I don't have a lot of money to gain. I don't have a job to give. But at the same time, I think you deserve a clean river. I think the cleanest possible. And I think the EPA has done a fabulous job. I think they've got a lot of political influences. They've got a lot of burdens. At one point, a whole staff was just whisked away under retirement, and the whole new staff had to step in, take over, and that's just in the last couple of years.
I noticed that they look young. I did notice that some of the people that I've seen representing the EPA look young.
Yeah.
And, I mean, not that that's bad, but it's, to me, I'm not surprised to hear that, you know, this is, it's gone on for so long that people have been replaced.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing that people can do to be informed about upcoming updates on the Superfund or just learn a little bit more on the inside. We have a newsletter. The CAG has a newsletter called the Willamette River Insider, and people can sign up. It's absolutely free. You can sign up on our website. Or shoot us an email and we'll make sure that you get on the list for that. And that comes out every 2 months.
And our website is very clearly www.portlandharborcag.info. And our chair has headed this website for a lot of years, worked very hard. We hope it's thorough, detailed, and it's for your benefit, not for our benefit, for your benefit.
Yeah, if I haven't made it clear, the Portland Harbor Citizen Advisory Group has been working for us for free for some of you for 16 years, wrapping your brains around and you have to deal with paid people coming to your PR people.
Well,
from
lobbyists. They have representatives.
Attorneys. Tons of attorneys.
Lots of consultants. We see a lot of representatives whose job is simply to lobby the city or lobby EPA or lobby the community.
And they're lobbying the community by going to your groups when you're talking about... I'm getting the sense that people are sort of... bullies, like they're bullying you or intimidating you a little bit.
You could say that we are a little outnumbered in resources, but we're certainly not outnumbered in spirit.
True.
And we're counting on that. And we know that, you know, we've got a lot of people. The people that are on the CAG are people that can really hang into a situation and have a lot of stick-to-itiveness and a lot of spirit. So we have that to match.
Yeah, this is our city, too. I've lived here 64 years and happily so, and want to continue to do so. And I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to work on the Superfund. It's my way of giving back, and I just love it.
You went to school so that you could be more effective.
I did. I did.
That's a lot.
Portland State was great. And I actually graduated in community development, but it was under community organization and change. But I took so many science classes specifically on water, environmental, everything I could to gain an understanding of what's going on with it.
Yeah, right. That impresses me. Okay, so we're going to wrap these things up now, and I'm just going to, again, read to you the forums that are put on by the community will be February 23rd. That's a Tuesday. It's from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Linton Community Center. You can park at the feed store. Forum number 3 is on March 29th. That's a Tuesday from 7 to 9. That's to be announced. Forum 4 will be on April 26th. That's a Tuesday again, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Portland Building Auditorium at 1120 Southwest 5th Avenue. And then the EPA also has some things coming up. Oh, yes. Okay, so the League of Women Voters, I know we have a promo. League of Women Voters is having a panel.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, February 9th, and that's at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah County Building, which is at 501 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. Again, that's Tuesday, February 9th. And then the Audubon Society is having a forum on February 8th. That's next Monday. And that is at 5151 Northwest Cornell Road. And I think that that's pretty much all we have time for. Thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your knowledge. And thanks for your service.
Thank you, Kristen. We really appreciate the ability to get some of this information out.
Yeah. Thank you, Kristen. Thank you, KBOO. Our honor, our privilege.
Thanks.
Something in a water drink. The wild one, a woman, wanna treat a man so bad. I've got to get to you, baby. Mm-hmm. People think I'm kinda smart. I must have fell asleep with you before we start. Don't keep it, mama. Something's on the finger. But you gotta talk to her, baby. Tell me who you really are. Something in the water. It's been the same with every girl I've had.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Community Acupuncture and Massage, a benefit for political prisoner Mutulu Shakur, Sunday, February the 7th, noon to 4 p.m. at 7 Star Acupuncture in Portland. Dr. Mutulu Shakur was one of the founders of the Black Acupuncture Advisory Association in North America and the Harlem Institute of Acupuncture. Incarcerated for 30 years, Mutulu and his legal team are seeking community and financial support to fight his imprisonment. A group of licensed acupuncturists and massage therapists are offering treatments to our community as a fundraiser. Again, that's of Community Acupuncture and Massage, a benefit for political prisoner Mutulu Shakur, Sunday,